here we are. This is episode 396 of the Anarchist News Podcast, a digest and or conversations on anarchist activity, ideas, and comments from the previous week on anarchistnews.org. This is for the week of December 21st through December 27th. And I have an extra dot in date for some reason. That's what's new this week, December 2024, Kate Sharpley Library Bulletin Online from Anon. This is left over from last week, but time is a construct. Anyway, the PDF of bulletin number 116 is available from the library. It includes a piece on the overturning of the verdict against Puig Antique, a promissory note for some upcoming info by Barry Pateman. Hi, Barry! Nice to hear you're still writing. A review of a pamphlet about the miner strike of the 80s, some library questions like what form should an anarchist library take, what kind of material should it include, etc. Note, maybe they want to talk to the anarchist library mods who also have to deal with this on the regular. There's also a piece on racism, aka No War But the Class War, etc.
The story of A Infos from Freedom News UK by Elisa Essay-Tuhumku. A post celebrating the 30-year anniversary of A Infos, which looks every internet year of it.
Every year, looking every year of your age? You've never heard that phrase?
No.
Okay.
Which looks every internet year of it.
Because internet years are different from regular years.
Okay. A post celebrating the 30-year anniversary of A Infos, which looks every internet year of it, or at least it did last I checked. A series of Anon said it best. A Infos is the grandparent of A News, InfoShop was the parent, etc. Anyway, this post talks a bit about the significance of the site and some of the people behind it. Quote, Andrew Flood was a contributing member of Spunk Press from its founding in 1992, a project which went on to be the largest archive of published anarchist media at the time, and digitally cataloged in 1995. He, alongside some of his Spunk Press team members, went on to establish A Infos. Unquote. Also, we hear about Chuck O in the comments. Sweet.
Russian anarchist found dead in his cell hours after sentencing from Freedom News UK by Nikita Ivansky. Full title, Roman Shvedov was given 16 years in prison. Authorities claim suicide. Quote, the Russian state accused Shvedov of throwing a petrol canister into the administration building of Zemanivsky District, Rostov Oblast, in September 2022. According to Russian secret police, he did this to, quote, destabilize authority, influence their decisions, and protest against the special military operation and mobilization in Russia. Unquote, he was sentenced under terrorist charges in another attempt to scare those contemplating further resistance to the war. In 2023, Shvedov denied any legal support from Solidarity Zone. Unquote.
The Reflections of a Russian Anarchist in Rojava, from CrimeThink. The writer ponders events in Syria, Rojava, and Russia, both separately and how they affect each other. Surreality is what I wanted
that's
to
kinda
say.
That's kind of cool. I like that. That would be pretty.
Yeah. Sometimes I just like to add a sound.
Couple of syllables. What the fuck?
It's fun.
Yeah.
I thought about adding. I couldn't think of something to add there.
Instead,
I stopped adding. So, yeah. Oh no, I left for a minute. The writer ponders events in Syria, Rojava, and Russia, both separately and how they affect each other, mixed with the surreality of quotidian events. Quote, in between my reflections, everyday affairs, and the organization of defense, our daily life is not without familiar things. An Arab comrade who has been through almost all the fronts of the defense of the revolution, pour sugar into the teapot with full ladies. Okay. An Arab comrade who has been through almost all the fronts of the defense of the revolution pours sugar into the teapot with full ladles, laughing and saying, Dims, Kurmanji for syrup. A cat named Mishka wanders among us, and we joke that she is part of the defense. A comrade next to me diligently writes Arabic script and shows her work to the Arab comrades, who patiently check her spelling, unquote. This kind of offering is arguably what CrimeThink does best these days.
Bakunin's Anarchism Against Compass, response to Bill Beach from Anon by Wayne Price. Sigh. On the one hand, I'm delighted that people are in dialogue about anarchist principles and activities and that they're using ANews for this. On the other hand, Wayne does do some defining of terms here, which can be useful regardless of the validity of any of these arguments. At any rate, dialogue is good. That's my argument, and I'm sticking to it for now.
Pirates, the End of an Illusion, from Ostrava Anarchist Federation. Pirates here refers to the Czech Pirate Party in Czechia. Someone hopes that not too many anarchists were under some illusion, though the Bernie supporters might have something to say to me. Anyway, quote, the pirates could still have some sense and remain in opposition as a protest party. That would perhaps allow them to hold on to their seats for two or three more terms. However, the intoxication of power was too strong, and so the former fighters against the establishment entered a coalition with the biggest creatures of post-November politics. Unquote. Yep.
Phoenix, help reopen anarchist space, make total destroy, from maketotaldestroy.com. To clarify, Make Total Destroy is the name of the anarchist space. The latest in Arizona distroism, this is mostly a request for funds to open a space, whether or not it could be called an info shop. We are also informed here of stuff that the Phoenix folks are making and planning. Quote, Make Total Destroy is the world's first, the world's only, and the world's last decentralized print shop. Fancy way of saying the homies got a bunch of print stuff at their houses and we collaborate in the most inconvenient way possible. But it's working and we're churning out some heinous shit quicker than we thought was possible. Unquote. There's some back talk in the comments for some reason. Some commenters do get their panties in a twist at the most random things.
Greeting to the memorial for Alfredo M. Bonanno in Carrara, Italy, from Act for Freedom Now. Greeks send messages of camaraderie to the memorial for Bonanno that happened on December 8th. Quote, through his work, Comrade Alfredo constantly reminds us that it's not slavery, but consensus for fetters and subjugation that eliminates the totality of freedom. It is ultimately the same subjugated consciousness that reproduces the capitalist cycle of production and its bondage. Consequently, against the illusions of capitalist democracy, the only way to step ahead towards freedom is that of destruction, not reform. Unquote. And more like that. Moment of uproar for Bonanno.
Indianapolis Anarchist Skillshare, January 11th, from Ujamaa Community Bookstore Instagram account. Suggested that we stop by for, quote, a day of panels and poly-ed. Unquote. Why does the term poly-ed alienate me so much? Is this yet another knee-jerk reaction against academia speak? Seems likely. Anyway, if you're in the neighborhood, don't let my allergic jargon reaction keep you from going and having some fun. Or do. I'm not the boss of you.
Myths and Truths About the Enemies of Our Enemies, from lucasborrell.noblogs.org. A researched attack on the practice of not just disregarding someone's fucked up politics, but celebrating them, because they're fighting the same enemy at the moment that you are. Describe some specific examples. Quote, so the question is, has the political situation really changed so much with the war in Ukraine that being an unbreakable anarchist now means something like being a friend of a neo-Nazi? Unquote. Pretty thoughtful comments in this thread, always a bonus.
Interview with Is, Algerian anarcho-feminist activist, from Liberté Ouvrière, an anarcho-syndicalist site out of Montreal, complete with red and black star. This interview is more feminism than anarchy, but the anarchy bits are pretty poignant. For example, quote, being an anarchist and feminist in Algeria, anarcho-feminista, is a daily struggle, since this fraction of the earth is the cradle of everything that anarchy condemns. This means preparing oneself for a certain solitude. I am talking about the solitude of the spirit. Unquote. Then the interviewer brings it back to class struggle. Lol.
Where'd stars come from? Why is that a thing?
I don't know. We did research on anarchist symbols a long time ago, and I don't remember any of it.
Stars.
Apparently. We get the stars.
And something else.
Circles.
Yeah.
Stars and circles. And bombs. We get the bombs.
Which are sometimes circles.
Sometimes, well.
If you're making a cartoon. Chronicle of the Demonstration in Support of Comrade Abel, from Indie Media Barcelona. Quote, 6 months ago, the Mossos kidnapped Abel, a fellow anarchist, and took him to Brian's prison. There, he is serving a sentence of 3 years and 9 months for being with a person who pushed a Nazi down the stairs of the metro. On the day of the events in 2018, there was a demonstration by Juicepol, a police union, which was confronted by a counter-demonstration. The Nazi was leaving the police union demo when he crossed the paths with Abel and another person, unquote. During this protest, some places, including a police station, were vandalized.
Woohoo! Obituaries. In memory of Giovanni Stefani from Umanita Nova, an anarchist in Rio de Janeiro, died at 50 years of age. He was a university professor. He wrote his thesis on Camillo Berneri, husband of Maria, and was loved by all. It says so here. Quote, a polyglot, he was a tireless translator of conferences, articles, and lessons from French and Italian into Portuguese. With Giovanni, we lose a scholar and a good and kind companion, a militant of the anarchist cause, loved for his engaging cheerfulness. Unquote.
Daniil Galkin, Victor Petitza, from GoFundMe. Punk with a fucked up childhood, tortured by cops for being an anarchist, so he left Russia at 18. Quote, after the Russian invasion in Ukraine in February 2022, he organized discussion/solidarity activities to support his anarchist friends and comrades there. In his last years in Western Europe, he was strongly missing Russia, his home, his language and culture, which didn't stop him from having his good, loud laugh and a sarcastic and black but funny humor with which we will always remember him, unquote. What do you mean by black but funny? Anyway, solace to his friends. They're raising money to deal with his body. There's an account to donate to.
Audio and video. An anarchist view from Rojava on recent events in Syria from the Final Straw Radio. 1 hour and 24 minutes. Quote, a conversation with Eriko, a combatant member of Tekushina Anarchist, an internationalist anarchist formation in critical solidarity with the Rojava revolution. For this episode, Eriko answers some questions we had about what's been happening in Syria and concerns from within the Democratic Autonomous Administration of North and East Syria, which is an organization. Unquote. Burst of goodness, the host asks good, informed questions, but most of this conversation is not about anarchist thinking. Exemplified by Eriko explaining how libertarian socialism is easier for people to understand than the word anarchism. So, you know. Anyway, the reader of the answers does a good job. The interview lasts until 1 hour and 15 minutes in. Then Sean, woohoo, here exhibiting his signature creativity in a faux presentation to young kids about the prehistory of goddess worship and stuff. Shit, I owe him a letter.
Topic of the week, pilgrimage. Few traditions are as long-standing, actively maintained, and poetically charged as our predilection for a transformative journey. Pilgrimage is a cosmopolitan affair with a practiced history spanning millennia across Abrahamic, Dharmic, and secular traditions. Muslims trek to Mecca, Buddhists visit the Bodhi tree, Christians have the Camino de Santiago, modern Jews subsidize a controversial birthright. Even enlightened aristocrats pull from the tradition of pilgrimage to invent tourism to their learned son, or for their learned sons as a rite of passage. Anarchists, a much more recent diaspora of non-believers, take a frenzied and experimental approach in their wanderlust. They go summit and train hopping, attend book fairs and coital convergences, crash RNCs and DNCs alike, return to jail through recidivism, and drop out at places like Dreamtime Village, Skatopia, Slab City, and Radical Fairy Communes. Some anarchists pursue meaningful nonprofit work as a calling, venture to environmental disaster sites during crisis, ascend the ivory tower of academia, or embark on life-altering psychedelic trips without ever taking a step. For many, their journey is an odyssey in reverse, a path toward war rather than a return from it. What are notable pilgrimages for anarchists, both literal and metaphoric? How can the periodic and rhythmic return to significant places be of particular importance to anarchism's negative tradition? Can returning to the same old places bring us somewhere new? How's it going, everyone? What's up, pilgrims?
Howdy.
Seekers.
Howdy, cowboy.
This is Vale.
That doesn't even make sense.
What doesn't?
Howdy, cowboy?
I was thinking about cowboys as pilgrims, but they're not.
It's because you're thinking of John
Ignore
Wayne.
Me.
Hello, pilgrim.
Maybe. Oh, wow. Thank you.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'm the Vale here with Petra and Larkspur, guiding you. We are your trip. We're your trip Sherpas this week on this journey that we're all undertaking. Okay. What's up? We're talking about pilgrimage. We're talking about, It seems like there's two things that jump off rip to me right away are like this kind of, you know, what's alluded to is like these kind of literal and metaphoric pilgrimages. And I guess it's interesting because like, I feel like literal pilgrimage is like kind of, I don't know. I think there's like there's obviously some value in like both of these, but like literal pilgrimage makes things feel like very, like, I guess very religious and in some ways that like, I don't know if how exactly equivalent they are to the activities that are like described here. And then the metaphoric ones are like, they kind of describe, they don't really describe much of like cyclical or like rhythmic things. Like they describe like journeys that like move outward from it. Like when you look at like taking a psychedelic trip, like one ostensibly is like changed from that rather than like returning to like a, you know, like they're moving through something. It's not like a kind of cyclical rise and fall the way that like a cycle of like pilgrimage is often. I don't know. We can get into it deeper, but yeah. What do you guys want to dig into here first? I was interested in the kind of like way that it sets up like pilgrimage and tourism as like opposed sort of opposing sort of like I guess not institutions, like activities and stuff. And what there was like a Hakim Bey thing that I was reading, the Overcoming Tourism essay that was on Anarchist Library and like Hermeticism or Hermetic.org or something like that.
Yeah.
And it distinguishes like pilgrims from tourists in that like pilgrims like I guess attend or like endure and like take on the pilgrimage as like this chance to experience like a blessing and stuff and like a kind of goal beyond their like material desires and stuff like that. Whereas like he like kind of sets tourism as like something that's like born less out of like devotion and stuff and more as like a born out of like a kind of like war or conquest. Like it's basically like tourism is like the activity of conquest to like consume difference and like consume mediated images and experiences that like offer difference as like a consumable product to people, which I think is like a pretty like I think that's pretty meaty right there. I'm not sure if it
Yeah.
like maps as neatly as that always.
I mean, yeah. Tourism can have a little bit to do with like the sense of the subject or like the person who's doing it, right? But it can also have to do with like the physical economy of a space. I was reading a little bit about the island of Patmos, which is where John the Apostle had the visions of Revelation, right? And that island right now is just like they subsist on tourism. Like it is a space for a sort of, and like in a religious sense, right? There's a lot of these sort of like spiritual retreats or spiritual journeys that are themselves kind of like an economic structure.
Yeah, definitely. It's weird
Yes.
to oh, go ahead.
No, I'm just saying it's interesting you're saying that. I just came back from my own tourism or pilgrimage of everyone's like going to visit family, but the island we were on is half funded by tourism and half, well, it's probably like 25-75, but it's partly its economy is tourism and the military, and that feels like such a little sort of way of looking at the American touristy urge. That said, I like my little hiking trips. I like getting out there, but there's something. I'm also sitting in a cafe and I'm like kind of looking at everybody's Patagonia bags and jackets and everything and thinking about this way, we kind of have a mediated consumption of nature and being in nature.
Well, like public lands as like a very like maintained, mediated kind of wilderness sort of thing that like is
No, keep
like
going.
oh no, it's yeah, it's very much like in what I was gonna say, and like it ties into this that like tourism like basically thrives in like the existence of like liminal space. Not just like the kind of like airporty spaces, like the spaces where no real life occurs, but like that exists solely for the like movement of people from one set of mediated images to the next. But like these like liminal spaces that are really like kind of they exist as like representation of life or like representation of images, how we conceive things. So it's like, yeah, like this image of like nature as like this kind of like liminal space, because there is not like really on some level this like concept that it occurs in any way that we can conceive of it as like nature and its unmediated form, because so much of that is tied to like some amount of like stewardship that like exists to like be wilderness on some level. Like,
Well, when you think about the formation of the park services, right? Like that's like kind of the whole thing in the United States is that we have all of these vast lands that are protected because they are contained, right? Because they're constructed as other because of fucking Roosevelt, right? Which is, I guess, not inherently negative. I'm glad that the national parks exist, I guess, but it's like it really kind of accelerates that sense of the separation between our life and the quote unquote natural world, right?
Well, the natural world also has to be separated from itself. There's like conservation around here, and I'm sure plenty of other places has a lot to do with removing quote unquote invasives. And you let whatever kudzu or spotted lanternfly or hemlock get too much, or English ivy get a good grip on the thing. Like that's nature, but it's not the nature that people are kind of coming for, so it has to be removed. And
Right, and there's like a sadistic impulse towards that almost. Like,
Oh,
I
yes.
remember someone on Facebook around here posting like a spotted lanternfly slaughter video where they were just stomping on a mass of them. Just completely bizarre. I think a lot of the culling of deer population has to do with that too. This impulse towards like a violent control.
Yeah, I mean, I will say that at least the deer population culling is like not like productive on some level, but at least you can eat those. Like, I know that's not much like relief to you as like a vegetarian, as like a vegan, obviously. No, I know, but like, I mean, it's an entirely like man-made problem because of like, deep de not de is it depredation? Like the idea of like removing like predator
Nate.
megafauna. But yeah, it is on some level like humans having to do culling as like a form of predation and stuff, which I don't know. That's gonna get us pretty far afield of the conversation, I think. But yeah, I think there's something about like specifically like the lanternfly culling that I think is like weirdly sadistic and like
Yeah.
ritual or like celebratory that feels it's a little too Starship Troopers for my bag. I'm like
They'll often like shoot them, especially the bow hunters, and just kind of leave them to die in the woods.
the lantern
Oh,
flies.
yeah. No,
Oh,
the
sorry, I was silent. Wow, what a shot.
the spotted lantern fly. But they're very small
Yeah.
bows.
Right, so that we were talking about liminal space. Sorry.
Yeah, we're off.
We're off
Yeah, I mean,
on
there's a different kind of calling that happens in those, right?
I think. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So like part of me wants to think about like these examples that are kind of pilgrimage, kind of tourism. And people talk about like summit hopping or train hopping. Or not train hopping, summit hopping or like book fairs or like things like Bashrack, and like you kind of
Oh, God.
come to this. No, not like that yet. You kind of like these things exist. Like there's often like they're utilizing infrastructure and stuff that like exists usually, but often like these are like kind of liminal spaces within the way that. Oh, it's kitty cat feeding time. Sorry.
That stays in.
You can just hear the tinkle of kibble in the bowls. Sorry.
Yeah, I love the liminal spaces Reddit posting the Bashback convergence.
Yeah, but
It really gets me in the feels.
they're doing it in the back rooms.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was gonna say, no, but like these kind of like liminal space, like these liminal images of like what this scene could be, I guess. Like
Right.
you get this kind of sense of like what the scene looks like, true, like from attendance of these events when like on some level it's a I like it doesn't reflect like what the scene looks like outside of the space of like all the resources needed to be mustered to like pull together like a convergence or something or like pull
Yeah, a
together.
festival, right? It is the festival, right?
And
In the
like
end, they must.
like you know what I mean? Like it kind of is like this like thing that you can look at as like, oh, this is like a reflection of like our capacity and like our strength, but like it's these like resources of expenditure that like are fueled by the kind of like economy and like the economy and like the flow of like people into them for this like discrete purpose, but it's maybe not like the reflection of like the vitality or something or like the muster of like a city's like kind of radical network and like radical spaces and stuff, like you know, the other like 50 or so week of the year, 52 weeks of the year. And like, I think it exists as like this kind of liminal space within how we think of like our like, you know, our like largesse politically or something, or like our like capacity is like this kind of weird mediated, not mediated necessarily, but like this weird like kind of like inflated image of like how we look as like a city, because it's like, oh yeah, things are huge in this city. Like I was there and like it was like there were so many people and stuff, but it's like also like a lot of them are like people who are like able to like make time to get to this thing. Like the numbers are swelled, the amount of resources being focused on like one thing swells. And like I think I'm more interested in like holding down infrastructure that like can be,
it's more long term.
Yeah, that isn't like quite as coming and going for it.
Liminal, as you said.
I'm really trying to not use liminal like in a super red
again. Yeah. I hear what you're saying about or temporal.
Not just temporal, but like liminal in the sense that it's like a space without like, not just like without permanence, but without like authentic image of, or like an authentic life. It's like an image of life that doesn't exist. Like,
yeah,
I'd almost contrast it with like charter fares or something like that, where your fare was sort of, I mean, it's a huge social event. It's a huge space for trade. But it's also almost a showcasing of a town, or it's a showcasing rather than just everybody expending energy into this one place or this one time, this one event. It happens and then that pulses onwards. I don't really, in theory, have a problem with that. In practice, I think it's kind of less interesting to me than other things. I agree about infrastructure is kind of a more interesting thing long term, but ideally you could have both. You could have sort of your Midwest, Mideast, Southwest, whatever anarchist book fair and convergence. And you'd also have whatever projects people are doing on a day to day, but I don't know. I don't think there needs to be any sort of like opposition between those two things, but right. I do think that having it as sort of like a convention almost is a lot different than having it as sort of a fair where you're more showcasing what a region or a city has to offer than kind of pushing everything into everybody's come in for this one event and then they'll leave.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think there's like something about like the summit hoppy thing that kind of the summit or like book fair convergence hopping thing that like I think just kind of rubs me personally the wrong way, and like maybe I should like work that kind of feeling out myself. But it's like this kind of like it I feel like it consumes a lot of attention or whatever, and like creates this like kind of like bubble, or like not like vanguard in the Leninist sense, but like this kind of like vanguard of like, you know, connections between like people who are like seeing each other on this like circuit, and in some ways like steer discourse through like being in the rooms and stuff, being in the rooms where like anarchy is being done city to city and stuff, but like it largely is just reflective of like,
is
you know,
it still a thing? The summit happens still occur. I feel like that stuff I view as very like kind of G8 protest period, right?
I don't think, yeah, I don't think the summit stuff is quite happening anymore because there's not like G8
are
or
there
like
still like
WTO
that Earth
summits.
first rendezvous? That's the
Yeah.
other thing that happens,
Yeah, there are.
yeah.
I mean, I would say there's probably like a certain type of book fair to convergence to book fair to convergence type of a thing. I love me a good book fair, but I also do see a certain skepticism towards it because it is essentially just us reviving a certain consumer culture, and I think at its worst, it tends to this sort of very personality focused. I don't know. I wanted to make do like an Eat, Pray, Love bit here, but I'm not gonna. Does that make sense, though, that it
Yeah.
feels like some of these things are just focused on a certain type of person or project accumulating cultural, social or cultural or intellectual capital as
Yeah.
the happening thing? And this is our project that's being showcased here and there. And that's definitely different than doing the work of day-to-day
Yeah.
things in your area.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know, like, are anarchist book fairs still like a thing that are a big deal? Like, I don't know if I've been aware that they're occurring, and but it seems like there's like five tablers and like maybe a couple of vague workshops, right? Learning how to stop someone from bleeding to death or clown polyamory get together, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think they are kind of still big. I don't know if they're like the focal point of like where anarchists gather any longer.
I think th I haven't been to one in probably 10 years. But I also just don't really see them occur. I go to other sorts of like small press events pretty regularly, and those seem very stocked. Like zine fests are full of people. They're full of a lot of very annoying, very trite people, and it's a lot of like personal, like autobio type work that's entirely centered around people's identities and a lot of the laundering of that.
Yeah.
I do feel that's just like a reflection of a certain tendency that is being exchanged with more like liberal identitarian
It's entirely liberal,
movements.
and I mean, I think there might be some vague anarchists, but even like, so like, there is one big supposedly anarchist publisher in the sort of zine sphere that
Uh-oh.
barely seems to have anything very political. And one time I was at a tabling event where they had a shirt that had, why am I blanking on his name? I always forget his name, the boyfriend from Girls.
Adam?
Yeah, Adam Driver. It had him in whatever Star Wars movie he was in, and it said, "You're not my real dad" on it. They were selling that on t-shirts as like an anarchist publisher. It's like, what is this? Just
Wait,
endless
who
consumption of pop culture?
was it Microcosm?
Very close, but no.
Damn.
Should I name them?
No, I don't think you need to.
Okay, people can figure it out for themselves.
That's just bizarre.
I'm still like weirdly like psychically tortured by the weird microcosm press, like the weird patch that they sell that's just like someone
The
like
vibrator
looking
one?
the vibe that's just someone menacingly like holding a Hitachi magic wand at like just this like this weird tulpa like of like just like I'm going to jack you off.
I feel like I've only ever seen that one like on someone's messenger bag like 10 years ago. It's strange to imagine it on like a battle vest or something.
I know. I don't think. I don't. Well, I think. I don't think like
Putting it next to a Grand Belial's key patch.
Jesus.
I don't think we need to be critiquing my battle vest right now.
Jesus. Oh my god. Oh my god, okay.
So
like, if we were to talk about like actual like anarchist pilgrimage, I mean, it seems like a lot of for if we were to get back to the fucking topic.
Yeah. It's if we were to our peers for a little bit.
I'm still stuck on that. The microcosm vibrator patch next to the Grand Belial's key patch is really funny. Okay. So if we like most of the sites of like anarchist pilgrimage that seem to be kind of talked about, like some of them talk about like these kind of like dropout places, like Dreamtime Village, Skatopia, which I went to school at Southern Ohio. That's a real throwback.
Here's, was that a Tony Hawk level?
They did make a Skatopia level on Tony Hawk.
Yeah, I remember it. That's, I think, my only context for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember that guy would pull up in like a limousine to like the bar.
What the fuck?
I don't know. It was like a weird limousine.
A liminal zine.
Enough. Enough. Stop it. I wasn't trying to like be like, oh, it's real liminal.
I understood that you were subverting the phrase.
It's not a phrase. I'm trying to actually talk about this, the experience of liminality. Okay. Shut up.
No, I think we should be able to talk about the experience of liminality. I think everyone's moved on to other sort of overused buzzwords, right. And we can have it back now.
I don't know. I'm trying to go to the Oogle orgy in the back rooms, personally.
Yeah.
It's a terrifying concept, like marauding queer Oogles in the back rooms.
You just have to noclip into room 69 of the back room.
Is it train wreck? Like a lot of pilgrimage sites, I guess, beyond those, like people have mentioned like different memorials, like the Haymarket Martyrs Memorial. And like, there are other like plaques I know that have been like erected in like various spaces.
There's the Emma Goldman one in Chicago.
Yeah. There's a few too. There's some for like, I think it is like one of the things that, has come about through the kind of like bashback milieu recently, where like, you know, a memorial for like people in that scene who have passed on and stuff, that I thought was like very like nice to see as well. I think it's also in like the Chicago area. But like there's also like, you know, the idea of like visiting graves as like part of a kind of pilgrimage, or like, I don't know. I mean, I went to Peter Lambord Wilson's grave not too long ago, and smoked a joint at PLW's grave, and it was nice, and arranged some stones. It was cute. But there was like I've talked about like wanting to go to like the sites of like Josiah Warren's like commune, or not commune, the phalanastery kind of that he attempted to set up called Utopia, like, which is really cool because it's like, it went from like utopia in the sense of like, you know, the phalanastery, like the Fourierist kind of commune, to like, basically I believe it like flooded and isn't there anymore. So it's literally now just a marker. It's a literal no place of utopia, like utopos sort of thing.
Non-place. Yeah.
But like the idea of like visiting like some of these like spaces of, you know, like experiments in freedom, like, you know, these communes or like the American Fourierist kind of phalansteries, like modern times. There's I read like a T.H. Metzger, like Tom Metzger. He was writing like a book, I think in the book that he wrote about like Huck and Bay, and they were writing about
He's really
like,
into like legend tripping, right?
yeah, like the like kind of going to the kind of like com or not commune sites. I don't want to say like communes, but like the kind of intentional communities of like millenarian groups and stuff. And
That stuff's super interesting, especially in the Northeast. I mean, Ephrata is still functioning. You can still visit it. I had a good friend that went there pretty recently. It seemed pretty beautiful.
Yeah, I think that kind of level of like pilgrimage is nice, or like the kind of pilgrimage that like allows you to like move, like arrive at a space with like a fairly like functioning anarchist infrastructure and like stay there for a while and contribute to it on some level, like sounds like a very worthy thing. And
It's a
I
bit of a
think,
bolo-bolo impulse.
uh-oh, yeah, it is. I mean, I think it too, like it's definitely is part of that kind of bolo, like the which in and of itself is like I think a very Fourierist kind of like phalanstery sort of
Definitely.
like structure of like arts and passions and stuff that like one can visit to and like converge, and there's like the expectation of like hospitality as like a great art that like one stakes their reputation upon. I really like that kind of like thought of moving through anarchist spaces and like moving through like anarchist scenes as like being something akin to the kind of like nomadic life. And I think some train culture stuff does that quite well. And like there's like a whole scene of like train kids that like move through anarchist spaces and stuff and like spend time like contributing to projects and setting up in various spaces of various like throughout the year and like kind of patterns. And I think that is like a really nice way to experience things, not just as a tourist and not just to the largest like kind of slightly artificial gatherings of like anarchist muster, but to like experience the kind of like sleepiness sometimes of like what an anarchist project looks like.
Think that's more like a, again, like a fair or that almost feels like a sort of migratory impulse where you're not just going to a place to consume very specific things or experiences, but you're within it. I find that very, I think that's a little, even that is a little different from treating, say, the Haymarket Memorial or something similar as like a pilgrim worshipped flagstone.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be cool for there to be actually more like weird, like kind of holy relics, like anarchist, like history and stuff, and like attempt to create the kind of like folk mystic objects of like anarchist history as part of things like that. But I also think that that could sort of kind of like folksy spiritual kind of like play stuff is like interesting to me. I know a lot of people don't find it useful, but
No, I like it, and it is kind of hard, right? Because like there's so many relics of ours are contained in the Labadie collection in Ann Arbor that it's like it's an academic institution you have to get into, right? It would be nice for some things to be more generalized.
Yeah,
I do
there's a
like the idea.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I also like the idea of like this sort of opened up hospitality. And I think we may have talked about this on the podcast before, but I think we're all in agreement that the idea of having some sort of festival or a competition of hospitality as a sort of expenditure is something that's very, that I like a lot as a potential project, or even an addendum to a project, like can your info shop or community space potentially like support putting somebody up for a couple of nights, and could they contribute to your project if they stopped through town and helped out in some way?
Yeah, that's something like I feel like long term in my own life, I would love to be able to have something, not necessarily a commune, but a space that people could visit and stay in and like participate in something.
Mm-hmm. Right?
But under my totalitarian control.
Yeah.
What is that?
I'm sorry, did that make it picked up? That's the that's the neighbors. It's Saturday.
Amazing. Yeah. That's cool.
What, you don't do your little Saturday howl?
No.
It was like it was somewhere between a woo and a howl.
Yeah, it was good.
There was a group of girls that like used to just sort of randomly appear at a communal house I lived at a long time ago, and they would, one of my friends referred to them as the woo girls, because they would get into these like loud conversations where they would inevitably just start making noises. And my friend was like kind of hateful of them, and it's so sad because there's something so beautiful about the idea of drunk girls wooing on your porch. I support them.
Right? Yeah,
they're the true pilgrims.
There's yeah, I like that, the annual migration of the woo girls. Yeah. It's so funny. Yeah.
I'm sure some of them were oogles in retrospect. Yeah. I think they had the danners with the tassel on the end, right?
Hell yeah. There, in that Hakim Bey essay, I think about tourism and stuff, they like, he talks about specifically like the kind of the dervish tradition, like the kind of like the dervish sort of like wandering and like the kind of nomadicism as part of like spiritual life, and like how I think it like kind of ties into this updated version too of like the derive of like the drift in his writing is like the kind of, you know, the deconstruction of like, it's about like, you know, the sacred drift, like the wandering of like the dervish and stuff, like quite literally.
Yeah, and there's like the steep archers also, like to think about like nomadic warfare is interesting.
Mm. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, is not the step nomad, but the nomad who stepped up.
Oh, good Lord.
But like, yeah, that kind of like idea of like a purposeful drifting and stuff, and like that tradition of like the drift from like through like these like spaces and infrastructures and stuff that exist. And being driven by like some kind of like higher purpose and stuff, I think is like it's a very sweet romantic idea that like I think is like quite nice to have within like anarchist space, where, you know, things like so often either like split off into like completely like what insular like kind of like self-driven like metaphysical projects and stuff, or like extremely like logistics and like material focus like minded like projects, and I think there's something to be said for kind of like maybe that like kind of middle ground of like this like self-guided wandering into and out of the spaces that contributes like to a general like hospitality and conviviality of things.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, before we were talking about, I was talking a little bit about night walking and that sort of, for me, it's this very, I've always found liminal spaces like airports or whatever in their own way very cozy. I mean, yeah. On a certain level, an airport's meant to be somewhat like comfortable because it is a space for, you know, they want you to come back, obviously. But those spaces that are very much dedicated to motion and movement and temporariness, I find very, very comforting in their own way. But I mean, one thing that I used to do a lot more and would send, I had my best friend and I would send each other photos of our nighttime, sort of just where we wandered to. And it's very self-guided and sort of insular, but also very comforting because whoever you run into at that time of night is right. Sort of in their own little, I'm sorry?
It's kind of charmed.
Yeah, everything just feels a little more enchanted. And it's just a state of kind of like flow and I guess sort of a reuse, like a different way of interacting with things that are common spaces, but because they aren't being used as common spaces really. Are now sort of opened up in new ways. Like one place I used to really love going to was this like pool. And when it would be drained, it's just totally quiet. Nobody's there, but it's just this quiet, self-contained little space. And on a very, very micro level, I could also see this as a sort of not necessarily a pilgrimage, but a pilgrimage-like behavior where you're sort of retaking or re-enchanting the world at night that you kind of just inhabit on a gross level in day.
Right.
Inhabit, not inhibit.
Yeah, I think when I used to walk around a lot at night, I was having really bad insomnia and I would just not sleep, and around, I don't know, like 4 or 5 a.m., there were a couple of, I feel like 24-hour convenience stores don't exist like they used to.
Mm-hmm.
But I would like set one as a goal and go and get a Cliff Bar and then go like walk to the bridge and look over the bridge and like walk the like bike path while it was completely empty. And that was like such a, I don't know, there's like a vague fear, but also just like a real like kind of cold beauty in that space, in a space like transformed, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think like that sort of, I think that like night and stuff carries a lot of like power and like mysticism and like kind of, you know, and like on like that kind of personal level, and that it's like a space of like possibility and a space of like what, like I guess like less surveillance or whatever. I mean, things are pretty surveilled whether it's day or night time, but like it feels like this kind of time when one can assert their presence and their control over the like physical space that they're in a little bit more than like one might be able to, and the kind of like clarity and like crowdedness of like daytime. And I think it's like as far as like things like the derive or whatever go, and like that kind of like drift, it's I think essential to it in a lot of ways. And it's weird because like that stuff feels like a little different than like pilgrimage, because it's something that kind of can be like a, like you said, like that kind of re-enchanting of like stuff that one can take on without like the large like kind of expenditure of, or the large expense of energy or resources and stuff that like one is required to do in like situations where like one must have to travel to like pilgrimage or something to perform
the intentionality is like, both are intentional actions, but a pilgrimage is on some level it's like a line, you're going from one place to another, but this sort of derive is sort of you're I often just set out with a vague idea of, I haven't walked over here for a while, or mm-hmm. I think I can climb to the top of this parking structure and get a good view, but it's quite random, and I think that's also very comforting for me in a way that even if it feels like our lives are very much routine and non-random, very regimented.
I was thinking in this how it kind of like it mentions like, you know, memorials and stuff, and it mentions pilgrimage as like kind of asserting some sort of like rhythmic element to people's life and stuff. And it kind of made me think about like the way that we look at like memorials and like the way that we kind of like keep time through like grief in a lot of ways, and how I feel like that's become such like a, I don't know, like maybe a massive kind of branch of people who seem to be in the anarchist space, and like the way that they want to process like doing emotional work is stuff that focuses very specifically on like the marking of time by grief and stuff like that. I'm kind of curious how one can do acts of pilgrimage maybe without like chaining oneself so like linearly to time, or like to like letting I guess the grief dictate like structure within one's life or something like that.
I think we could do an entire whole other discussion about the way certain emotions are valorized and over, I wanted to say overprocessed, but I don't think that's fair. But the way certain emotions are valorized, and how certain, especially grief in the past year or so. But yeah, that could be an entirely different, like that could fill an entire episode.
Sure.
Grief with a pilgrimage or a cenotaph, it's something that is fixed in time, and on a certain level it's given its spatiotemporal being. And then I think part of the point of that is that you move on from that grief. It doesn't just endlessly reverberate through your life. Right. Versus some of the things I'm seeing about grief as this valorized emotion seem to be kind of almost a call towards incessant grief and to processing grief in a way that never fully ends it.
Yeah. It's interesting how like the physical space that serves as like a sort of, I don't know, holy spot, right, can be marked by sort of violent rupture. I always kind of like, I know people who've gone to the Branch Davidian compound, and I think that's something that seems like a really powerful thing to experience. I know I went to a grocery store that was the spot of a spree shooting, a workplace shooting, and it was very, very bizarre and strange and charged. I don't know. And we're seeing a lot of that occur right now. I wonder how much the question this week is referring to at the people traveling for the spot of the CEO assassination. It's interesting.
Yeah.
Right? I didn't know that was a thing.
But oh, yeah, of course. Anytime there's a violent rupture like that, there's a lot of people who, I mean, it's people taking bricks from the spot where a murder occurred, right? There's that. Focus. I mean, not.
That's not so medieval.
Valorize our comrade Leoji. Leoji.
Leoji.
Well, it turns out that you know something that we don't.
Yeah. I mean, I think that kind of That kind of feels like, I feel like I've done, like, you just go to, like, going to, like, a place where something kind of morbid or, like, highly, or some act of, like, high weirdness or something occurred and
Right.
stuff is, like,
Yeah,
a pretty.
Auschwitz, Civil War memorials, like,
Yeah.
it's a huge thing.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of that kind of stuff, I think, is also like a way of, letting that kind of like grief emanate and stuff, and like feeling that grief as like a kind of heavy presence and stuff. And I don't know. I don't know how it like serves as like a kind of like rhythmic thing, or like how like rhythmic like catharsis is necessarily. Yeah.
I think there just has to be some level of catharsis, at least the way I'm seeing this sort of grief being discussed or being discussed. It isn't cathartic. What do you say? Cathartic did? Oh my
Cathartic.
gosh. Yeah, it isn't. Like, there is no resolution to
Cathartic.
it. And
Yeah.
I understand why people feel that there's no resolution to it. It just feels like you're being pressed down more and more by the weight of things that are going on that are horrible, what you're trying to fight against, or
Right.
just being in a world that is so top-down vicious. I mean, I understand that there's, yeah.
I don't want to be uncharitable to it entirely, but on some level too, it feels like the kind of like inward turn away from like a kind of revolutionary kind of eschatology towards like something that's kind of like at the same time both like very like individuated and like part and parcel to the kind of atomized processing language around like processing and like care and like self-care stuff, where like grief becomes the substitution to like what organizing or building capacity and stuff, and like all of these things serve as basically the building up to like what might will one day be the cathartic rupture that kind of releases us from all of this.
I think there is. I guess I'm falling on two sides of this, having my own sympathy towards people who feel that sort of, especially if you're doing some sort of international solidarity
Oh,
work or
yeah.
even just following the fucking news. It feels overwhelming and horrible,
Oh,
but
yeah, absolutely.
there's also a certain tendency and maybe even a type that turns this from this is this horrible thing to look how I am being affected.
Right.
And
Oh,
I
my
think
God, yes.
we've seen that a bit recently in various manifestations where it's almost this
Yeah.
consumption of the suffering of others and then turned
Yeah.
into this is how this affects me.
Yeah. It seems like some of the most prominent voices, and especially like our section of left stuff, are obsessed with this signaling of how distraught they are by world events, their own distress at world events. And it's kind of like, what is that? What we should be focusing on, how you are uniquely the person who feels the most about others suffering, right?
I feel ashamed to be on some level to be so distraught because I'm not the one being bombed or harmed or tortured or maimed or any of these things. Anyways, I think it's just a whole thing because, yeah, but I feel ashamed for that. I do think that those emotions are something we should they're very nuanced emotions, but I think there's definitely a type of activist or person who will turn this into a very self-centered and very consumable way of talking about their grief and their suffering and how you're looking at this, and you're like, or even the way they'll talk about seeing things on news, Twitter or news or whatever, it'll turn into, well, I just saw this horrible war crime and now I have to go do a mundane task in my life. And certainly that is a weird rupture to experience, but you weren't actually the victim of a war crime. You just saw it on Twitter.
That's the obsessive rhetoric, right? The how can I pick my kid up from school, wash the dishes when I know how horrible the world is. It's like, well, I don't know. We've all been doing it every day. I don't, hopefully this isn't your first rodeo.
Yeah.
I mean, like, without being too, I guess, like, uncharitable to it, I don't know. I mean, like, I definitely sympathize with that because I feel like there's a lot of numbness that I think is, like, something that others feel that I think is, like, also justified.
So it's an attempt to push against, right?
Yeah. And then there's, I don't know, I think it's just, like, kind of what happens when, like, solidarity becomes, like, a gesture of, like, emotional feelings rather than, like, an outward form of attack, like solidarity as like an activity of reprisal and stuff, and an activity of like attacking one system out of some like outpouring of solidarity, like some kind of like outpouring of like rage or something, rather than just like the internalizing of like thoughts of solidarity as effectively just thoughts and prayers, but for anarchists.
We could do a whole thing.
Something tied into that too, like in the topic itself, there was this kind of jab seemingly at like pilgrimage of like people doing mutual aid and stuff, like going to the new natural disaster. I don't know if I really cared for that little thing. Like, I don't think it's like inherently,
maybe one of the more beautiful things we're able to do is provide immediate disaster relief. I think if we're going to do something, that's probably a good thing to do.
Yeah it's like I also don't think it's like a particular like pilgrimage. Like, I don't understand how you can really call it that unless you really want to focus on like anarchists are basically religious people who don't know it yet and stuff. Like,
I think there is an analysis there though, because I mean, not in a necessarily in a negative way, but I know multiple people that during New Orleans, anarchists or like who were vaguely socialist-y college students who went to New Orleans to provide aid and ended up involved in quote unquote mutual aid projects that they consider like fundamentally radicalizing for them.
Right? Sure.
So there is something even in an anarchist sense of pilgrimage that definitely happened around New Orleans, where people saw just like the extremes to which the city was just left to fucking die. Mm-hmm. And also the kind of like incredible, I don't know, kind of ability of people to provide aid, right? And like build something in that rupture. Yeah.
Yeah, I have to say, if we're doing anything as anarchists, I mean, unless we're the most atomized branch ever, I think doing this sort of DIY disaster relief where you identify a need on the ground where you're perhaps with your own like local chapter of whatever group that you're doing this with, and go down and try to help in the face of government inaction. I mean, that feels like the whole part of it. For me, that's the whole point of this project, although there are obvious personal benefits. And
I mean, I think it's already, I think it's like a totally worthwhile activity. I just don't know that it's like inherently like one that one might speak of as like a type of a pilgrimage, because that implies that like disaster is like the kind of like
A relic site.
like the kind of like transcendent moments that like people flock to for like some kind of greater purpose. And I think that like looks at
But it.
like I know it can and stuff, but I think that like kind of casts things as like a very disingenuous kind of like acting outside of one's own like interest and stuff. Like they are it feels like kind of the way that's phrased as like a pilgrimistic activity makes it feel slightly like, I don't know, vampiric or something of.
Yeah, kind of belittling.
Yeah,
I did notice it.
it's belittling in a way that I don't care for, considering
Yeah.
how that demonstration of actual capacity to like do anything is actually quite impressive compared to
Right.
half the things anarchists spend time jerking off about.
Yeah.
I did notice there's no discussion of, I don't know, any of the various internationalist attempts at, say, going abroad to.
Well, there's been plenty of those
Right.
this week, I will say, on the A News feed.
Oh,
Shout out
my.
Tim DeClaire. Thank you for your analysis, in my opinion, of what's going on in Belgium. Appreciate their comments pretty regularly whenever I see those, kind of mapping out some of the weird kind of slippage within anarchist and nationalist stuff, like militia stuff or militia activity in the kind of Russian-Ukrainian sort of war right now.
Yeah, it's interesting how that seemed that impulse towards like an overseas nationalist front seems to be so common for anarchists as their site of pilgrimage.
Yeah, I mean, on some level, it's like a way that people respond to disaster, though, too. And like, I think there is like worthwhile thing to, that things and activities that anarchists can involve themselves in that space. They just, we've talked about this. I don't know if we talked about it actually on the podcast, but they don't, to me, look like military activity on behalf of a state project as much as they do attempting to aid the like logistics of like desertion and sabotage of people away from conscriptions or whatever. Yeah, I don't know. Hey, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, you can certainly have that sort of overseas pilgrimage that isn't necessarily trying to go intervene in some sort of armed conflict. Although, well, I suppose it is an intervention. I'm thinking of various people who go, say, try to protect an olive harvest in occupied Palestine or whatever. But it's a urge of movement, but maybe not one of pilgrimage.
And like again, also an incredibly like worthwhile activity. Just not one that I think, really, I think calling it pilgrimage belittles it in a way that like I don't know is always intended, because I do think there's something very like beautiful about like a kind of like act of self-guided pilgrimage and stuff that isn't like, doing the kind of anarchist sneering at like religiosity manifesting in secular ways sort of thing. That I'm guilty of myself sometimes, but like, I don't know, that just kind of stands on its own as an activity worthy of happening because it speaks to like a kind of, I don't know, inherent value of aiding people against like the complete like mediation and destruction of their way of life or something like that. But yeah. We are kind of a little over at time, so do you guys want to wrap that up?
That sounds good to me.
All yeah, right, y'all. So. Thanks so much, and we hope you all have a happy new year. Good night.
Good night.
Bye.
This week's podcast was sound edited by Rosinante. The What's New is written by Chisel, read by Chisel, and...
Someone else.
We hope this podcast was useful to and fun for anarchists and the anarcho curious.
Well, I drove late down to the edge of the lake. Where your hometown shines far on the other side. I trace with my finger the streets we used to terrorize.